Welcome to Fresno's Best Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Maddox. Today we have Diane Friedrichs on the show. Diane is the founder of FART, an animal rescue organization that stands for Foster, Adopt, Rescue, and Transport. Diane and I had so much to connect over, particularly our love of dogs, about the state of Fresno, animal rescue, and so much more. I know you'll love this conversation. Let's go meet Diane, and Baker will take us there.
On infinite quests, investigating, making convos to elevate guests. Politics, religion, culture, art, music, show some respect to the best little city left in the U.S. Fresno's best! Fresno's best!
Diane, where do you like to eat in Fresno?
So I don't go out much at all. It's like, sadly, don't go out much because I have heard there's tons of great places to eat, but I cannot tell you one off the top of my head because that's how little I go.
Order food to your house?
Yeah. So I'm the type of person where like my breakfast is usually nothing. And then lunch is usually if I remember, and then by dinner I'm like starving, so it's a frozen pizza in the oven or just like cheese.
Got it. So like food as utility for you to do the things that you need to get
Function.
Done every day.
Oh, okay. yeah okay. It's
do you have a favorite do you have a favorite frozen pizza brand?
No, I don't, but I do have something to talk about with restaurants.
Okay.
I always tend, like when I go to restaurants, because I want going out and eating food to be an experience. Like, I just don't want to go get a burger because someone said it was good. I want it to be like the best burger. Yeah. And at what level does that ever happen? I don't know. But I usually don't like ordering at restaurants. So I'll always just order the sweet potato fries if they have them, regular fries if they don't. And then that's kind of my determination on whether or not I would order something else off the menu. It's always the fries.
Yeah, the fries are key because it shows an attention to detail. Is there anything you like to dip sweet potato fries in?
Sriracha.
Sriracha. Okay.
100%.
Not like ketchup sriracha, just straight up sriracha.
I drink that stuff.
Just bring the fire.
So good. I usually in my fanny pack, I'll carry a chili with me, like either habanero chili or serrano cherry or jalapeno, just kind of depends. Okay. Always in my fanny pack. You just never know when someone isn't going to have the spice you need.
We might need to, no pun intended, dig more into your fanny pack later, but let's jump into talking about
that
animals.
Was so good. Yes, let's do it.
So was there a particular pet you had a special relationship with growing up?
Yeah, I had special relationships with all of my pets growing up. I can remember every single one of their names. Each one of them, I remember having their own personality, their own, like they were like their own human in my life almost. Like it wasn't just my cat Straganona, you know, which was this little, she didn't have a tail. And when I seemed like didn't have a tail, not even a nub. It was like an indentation where tail should be. And she leaked everywhere. So what I know now as incontinence. She had that, but I didn't know that growing up. I just thought, you know, it was so I'd put little diapers on her and stuff. Anyways, yeah, every animal growing up was, and still to this day, it's each one of them is just so special.
And did you share that with your family, or were you uniquely attached to your pets?
You know, I've never actually said that out loud because I've never really understood why I cared about each one so much until I started getting into rescue and looking back on when did I start loving animals? Like, why is my favorite animal a goat? You know, like I start looking back to my childhood and I realize like I had these special moments with animals all the time throughout my childhood. Like a goat is my favorite animal because we're at Disneyland when I was like six, and I can vividly see the picture in my head. I can see what I was wearing. I can see what my hair was. And there's this goat sitting right next to me with its little paw like across. And I remember I didn't remember not wanting to go anywhere else in Disneyland except right there. I remember being in that moment. Like it just, like I get the chills talking about it because there is so much joy attached to it. And I think if you're able to channel that like inner child joy, it's so much easier to like carry as an adult and realize that things you have in your life really do have special, should have special connections to them.
Wow. Well, and the reason I ask about your family is, you know, I've met kids that like their families don't have pets and they just really desire it. And it doesn't seem to come from a place of nurture. Like the family didn't have pets, but they really love animals. Mm-hmm. So I was curious in your place, if this was something that you just had, or it was something that your family instilled in you.
Well, it's funny because like I'm in rescue now, right? And my mom used to breed Rottweilers.
Okay.
I can't tell you a single puppy's name. I know mama's name, Hannah. But that like the I don't remember the puppies. Like I remember being excited that there were puppies, but every one of like my animals, you know, like that's where the connection was. So it's interesting that you even like I didn't even know that connection until you just even said that.
Does your voice change or do you say weird words when you talk to dogs? I refer to it as parcel tongue from Harry Potter when the wizards can like speak like snakes.
Yeah.
And so like I will never do it out loud.
What
the sounds that I make to people that are not in the circle. It's just, it's like, I don't know. It's just a different language. You don't know the language, so you won't understand it.
I want to learn. Like, I want to hear, what if people want to understand the language from you? Would you do it?
Well, I feel like it would have to be, you know, we'd have to go on a first date.
Sure.
And then always, you know, a series of follow-ups, and then I might be open to it. But my question is for you. Does your voice change? Do you say weird shit to your animals?
No, well, yes, I say a lot of weird shit to my animals, but it's in like almost normal communication. Like I have conversations with them all the time. And of course, when I think they're cute, like Norman, my golden retriever, I think he's a chunky nugget, right? Like
yeah,
I call it squeeze energy. That's what I call it. It's like, you're just so cute. Like, I just want to squeeze you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like you're desperately like squeezing like a wet towel or mm-hmm. sponge. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Give me more affection. Yeah.
Exactly. That's kind of the voice that comes out. Otherwise, it's just like this.
Yes. When did you start rescuing animals? What was the story there?
I don't think unless they really planned it out. I don't think any rescuer like ever really plans to get into rescue. And I think we'll all probably agree at least on that one thing. But I realized that I could help animals I choose to bring into my care with a dog that was scheduled for euthanasia because she was wobbly. She had CH, so it's just, she's never going to get like better from it. And she, because of her wobble, she was, you know, first on the euthanasia list. And a friend contacted me about her. And this is the type of friend where she wouldn't reach out to someone who she didn't know as like a dog person. So she reached out to me, and she also wouldn't put me in a position where if she couldn't take care of it herself, I just knew she needed me. And so I listened to the story and I'm like, okay, I'm in, 100% in. I go to pick up this dog like an hour before she's supposed to be euthanized, and she comes out Miss Prancy Pants Happy, right? Like just this big wobble attached to her. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is going to be amazing. It was amazing. But what I'm getting to is I posted an 8-second clip of her online that went viral of her walking out to that, get it, get it, get it. Does that, I'm sure there's like a start and an end to that. I just can't think of it. Yeah. But so that went viral. Someone in Canada saw it who works with like the person who adopted, she was Poppy, she is now Timber, could not have been a more perfect fit for this dog. I mean, to the T, I get goosebumps just talking about it. At that moment, I realized the power of social media. I realized that these dogs that don't have a chance, I can get in front of people and be this vessel for them while that perfect forever family sees them. And that's why a lot of our animals, they have those weird like quirks and needs. And I choose to keep them in my care as long as I can to know them as much as I possibly can. I'm going to take that back. Hold on, rewind. I don't keep them in my care as long as I can. I feel like someone would just be like, she's hoarding them. No, until I feel like they, like somebody can take care of them better than me. So a dog can come in and be with me for a day before I realize like, oh, I need to see if I can reach out to another rescue because this is far beyond my needs. Or a dog, the longest a dog has been with me is 733 days because that's how long it took to find her perfect family. So I realized at that moment when Poppy Timber came out, I can have an impact in this world that I see is in of need.
Connect that to starting an organization. Cause sometimes we feel like inspired to do things. And then it's just like I just am the guy that pulls over on the side of the farm road and picks up a dog and drops him off somewhere else. But you took a next step. So can you take us through the process?
I like how you said that too, because it is an evolving process. You see a dog on the side of the road, you pick it up, you bring it to your local shelter, because that's exactly what you should do. That's why shelters are there. So I decided to become a nonprofit because I really wanted to do more. I wanted to expand more. I wanted to be able to have those perks of a nonprofit. Meaning, like, I want to be able to log on to Cuddly, which is a donation-based platform, and I want to be able to request maybe some crates or food or whatever it is to help me be better in this thing that I'm really passionate about. So that, and then that's another thing you have to learn, you know, how do you apply for this thing? A lot of people like say like, oh, it's so hard. And then you get that idea in your head. And so you put it off and you put it off and you think you need someone else to do it. And then like, actually, when you sit down and you look at it, the foundation of it is just filling some stuff out and submitting it with, I don't know how much it was, like $85. I don't know. Don't quote me on that. But then it's like, you're second guessing, like, did I do it right? Am I going to get in trouble by the IRS? Like, what, you know?
Yeah.
Small rescue is hard because we don't have that knowledge and we have to figure it out as we go. And that is kind of what, at least from my experience, has dug me into a hole where I've had to limit myself to rescue in a way I never thought when I first started, just to be able to value my own mental health.
That makes sense. Well, I love the acronym FART, Foster, Adopt, Rescue, Transport. Yeah. I think it's the greatest single animal rescue name ever. But I'm also, I taught middle school for a number of years, so I also have that sense of humor. So that's probably part of it as well. Before, I want to jump into a bunch of things related to animal rescue. And I want to start by talking about no-kill shelters. It's something that's growing across the U.S. But when I look up places where there's no-kill shelters, they tend to be like progressive, large cities. And I just don't know do you think no kill shelters can function in like rural areas where there's all these farm dogs and it's just like, it's just an ocean of animals. Like it just doesn't seem, do you think it's feasible for Fresno to have a no kill shelter given everything?
I think it depends on what size the city wants to build the next shelter at. Yeah. I think it depends on the city actually understanding that they have a responsibility for animal welfare. They have a responsibility to provide animal control and they subcontracted out. So at what point is the city, the county, not doing their job? Because we're drowning, we're in the position that we're in because there is no regulation. There's nothing. Well, and I think people need to understand it. Like shelters are contracted by the city. What happens when the shelters are full? Like shelters that aren't contracted by city, they can say no to animals coming in to keep their numbers down.
Right.
So yeah, no kill shelters can 1000% exist in every place.
It's just about capacity is what you're saying. Yeah, that makes sense.
It's about the contract that they have.
Yeah.
And that shelters want to be no kill.
Can you talk about the relationship between the different shelters? Like, do you guys communicate a lot? Do you coordinate? Or are they kind of isolated and then you kind of reach out if you're desperate?
I think both. From my opinion and from what I know rescue as, because you can ask any person in rescue that same question and they're probably going to have a different answer to everything. But from my opinion and my perspective and what I've learned being in here, I watch things for patterns. And what I see is we know these big shelters like Fresno Humane, SPCA, Fresno Animal Shelter. So what is the difference between those? I think that's like we have to understand what's the difference between those. What's the difference between rescues? It's like we're our own little like octopus and our arms reach out to everywhere that we feel is going to help keep us alive. So I love our local shelters. I think the people there do a really great job. I think that a lot of people are upset with some things that happen in shelters and what has to happen. I don't think that they consider learning more about the ethical standing behind it. Like, are they contracted with the city? Do they legally have to make these decisions to keep animals at a certain level? Like, people need to just dig a little bit deeper. Like with SPCA, you can read both good and bad reviews there, but what are you doing to find out yourself?
Now here's a complicated question, and it's one that I think about a lot as someone that has minor panic attacks when I see a dog on the side of the road driving to work.
I know what you mean. That's why that was an actual heartfelt. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% there. I wonder often about how to bridge kind of cultural differences along animals. You know, Fresno has a lot of immigrant communities that come from places where there's just dogs wandering the streets. Yeah. It's like normal to see that. They do not, you know, some people do not have panic attacks when they see a dog wandering through a farm field, even though I do. How do you negotiate when someone is confused as to why you're treating this animal that's just part of the landscape to most people with like a level of attention that maybe they're not used to?
And that is probably one of the most difficult things to do in rescue is to understand that each situation that you encounter is unique to its own situation and having these ideas of what should be, like you said, may not exist or have ever existed with, let's just say, like a person who has a dog and the dog stays right next to him and they're walking up and down a busy street and someone driving by is going to say, what an irresponsible owner. What if that person just doesn't know better? And when we see animals that are unaltered or having litter after litter, again, it's how do we even control that? Like, what can I do instead of like looking at this situation? Like, what else can I do to help and not point the finger at anyone as to whose fault it is? So do I need to walk up to that house and say like, hey, I see that you have quite a few dogs in your yard. Do you need help with, you know, finding rescue and spaying and neutering you know, the ones that you want to keep. I think it's important for people to have compassion when they see situations in the right context, like, because there are bad things that happen that we see, like the ACOs with the animal control officers with Fresno Humane. There's what, six of them maybe, and they cover all of Fresno County. What? Like, you're joking, right? Like, they, the six are in control of every single animal's welfare in Fresno County. That's wild to even think about. Like, I get the chills when I get real, like, when I have, like, it's insane. Like, so the only thing people can do is what can I do to help? If helping is taking a picture and posting it on a lost and found page, that's helping. I do that almost like at least two times a week. I'm posting because there's stray dogs in my area. I can't do anything and I'm a rescue, but I'm still choosing to do as much as I can in that moment. And that takes a lot of reflection from rescue specifically, because we get ourselves into these positions where it's, oh, I can do more. I'm going to go help this dog. And now we've just spent 6 hours of our day, you know, chasing this dog that had an owner down the street, or, you know,
yeah.
What would have happened if I just would have taken a picture and posted it, because I have stuff I'm responsible and committed to in my life right now.
Let's talk about trapping, because you brought it up. And it's something that I think about when I see one, you know, running through an orchard. And I think about it and I'm like, okay, if I pull over right now and I try to get this dog in the car, you know, I'm going to have to call in sick from work, because there's no way I'm going to have time to A, trap the dog, B, find somewhere to place the dog and get back to work on time. It's just impossible. Are there, talk about how you approach trapping a dog and getting a dog into a car.
Gosh. So again, it's just each situation is different. What can I do in that moment? If, for example, I saw a little dog, it was so cute, like a chubby Chiweeny type thing, but like compacted, like an actual, like, probably kindergartner's drawing of a dog is what this dog.
Yes.
Yeah. But I'm on the 99 going south and I see this little nugget and I'm like, what the heck? And it just so happened, like, here, is it God? Is it the universe? Like, what? I'm right next to an off ramp. So I get off because I know, like, I can at least get this dog away from traffic. And then it kind of is like the next level, right? Is, okay, I can get it away from traffic. Is it injured? Is it going to let me catch him, her? And this little one wanted nothing to do with me. And it tried to get away as fast as it could, but it couldn't run fast. So I just had a blanket with me and I put it over the dog, you know, scooped it up, put it in the car. And now I'm like, shit, now there's a dog in the car. Right. I'm not supposed to have dogs in the car. It's 3:30 p.m. The shelter closes at 4:00. You know, all of those things start going through your head of, what do I do? But I knew the shelter opened tomorrow. And from the capacity that I had the capacity to keep this dog overnight safe. And I take it to the shelter in the morning, because that's what someone should do if they find a dog that they can't handle. Shelter's full, right? So then I ask myself, okay, what else can I do? Can I post her online? Can I hold her another couple days? How long am I comfortable doing this? But I know that I'm comfortable to at least try and find the owners. I know I'm comfortable enough to take pictures, post online that I found these animals on the appropriate sites that, you know, I should, or learn to should. And then that's what I do.
Yeah.
It's just a level. And then also, guess what? This little fat thing had owners, and she was 3.5 miles away from home. And it's those moments where you're just like, holy sh like I am so glad I just chose to do what I could.
Yeah. And that's takes a lot of bravery to do that, because you're saying, I'm going to disrupt my day and I'm going to open this box, and it could explode.
Right.
You know, it could
Yeah.
just, I mean, there's just so many complications that go into it. We're going to transition from this more serious subject to a light subject, my favorite section called overrated versus underrated. I'm going to throw a bunch of things at you. You tell me whether you think they're over or underrated and why.
Okay, hold on. Let me get ready. I
Okay.
feel like I should stand
You
up
got
for
to
this or
assume
something.
the posture. Yes. Yeah. That's very intense. All right. First one, refrigerated dog food, over or underrated?
By general terms, completely underrated if it's in reference to it being like a fresh meal that's prepared for them as refrigerated. So underrated completely.
Okay. Next one, those
Not just
horrible.
like cold kibble, right?
No. Just, I'm talking about the stuff that you buy in the refrigerated section.
Okay, yeah.
That horribly expensive refrigerator thing in Whole Foods, where you see like the beautifully extra organic chicken or
Yeah, I
whatever.
think there's one in Save Mart too.
Next one, those horrible SPCA commercials where you cry. Are those over or
Okay.
underrated?
So it's the ASPCA commercials that you cry at. ASPCA and SPCA are two different entities
Okay.
completely. Isn't that wild?
That is
Most
wild.
people don't know that either, but they are completely 1000% overrated.
Okay, you don't like them?
I don't like that ASPCA takes advantage of people not knowing that there's a difference between ASPCA and their local SPCA. And ASPCA does a lot of great work. They do a lot of fundraising. You've seen the people standing outside Walmart, like getting paid $40 a month or whatever. But what I can't stand is they do this thing called match giving with payroll. So they target companies where they say, like, employees, like, hey, and so that they bring in so much money from, they have one shelter in New York. ASPCA. They have one shelter, and if you go to their website and look at their adoptable animals, I think there's probably less than 20 on there. It's insane. So do the good work, but that whole payroll thing, like what if that was able to be split up within a certain like county? Like everyone who thinks like just provide a platform for us little guys to like also benefit from you taking money from people that are in our area.
Next one, the movie Homeward Bound.
Come on. Do we start crying like now?
Yeah, well, we have to, right?
There's no like, okay, it's underrated then, 100%.
So
Yeah, under.
you like movies where animals talk, because sometimes I have mixed feelings about this,
Oh
you
no,
know.
just Homeward Bound.
Just Homeward Bound. Okay.
That's it. Yeah,
Okay, so
no.
just that movie in particular. What are your thoughts about, anthropomorphizing animals, making them like humans?
I think because of the connection, like when Homeward Bound was out and me as a child, right? That's how I talked. Like, I would have loved if my animals talk like that. I don't like it in regards to if it is like a trying to just influence like something in a certain way and utilizing a dog to do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Next.
So underrated Homeward Bound. I love
All right.
it.
Next one, walking dogs in high heels.
Yeah, I did that.
Yeah, I'm
10 steps.
referencing that. Is that
Oh,
underrated?
you are? I didn't know. I was like underrated.
It's enjoyable. I can't imagine, I have done a
Oh,
number of
it's just the
high heel
thrill.
attempts. Yeah.
It's a thrill of knowing that this like 11 to 13-year-old bully mix that has like minimal leash skills, and I have a leash on her and I'm in heels, like it's just like I have one shot at this, just 10 steps, just do it, and then it's like I survived. I don't think I would do it. I would totally do it again. I would do it again.
Okay. Next one, big box pet supply stores like PetSmart. Are those places over or underrated for you? Okay. Why?
Overrated because they're just, I mean, if you look at like what they sell things at versus what you can get online if you're going there for a specific purpose, and they're just ick.
So you think they make it more expensive to be a pet owner by the way they price their things?
1000% they do. And what are they like guiding people towards? Are they like educating pet owners? Like, are they saying like, or why do you have 50 different harnesses to choose from? Why don't you just, you know, narrow it down to the good ones? You're going to charge that much anyways. Do it right.
Okay. Next one, supplements for dogs. I know that's trendy right now, giving your dog. There's even, I was reading an article, like people are giving their dogs like CBD now, CBD supplements. And I was like, I guess maybe for pain, for inflammation, maybe. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, CBD is great for humans and animals. I think because what we grew up to know dogs as, we have this thought in our head that that's what they should be. So with kibble, right? Like, it's awful. I feed our dogs kibble, and that is, but I also am very aware that if I just give each of them 5 blueberries a day, I can reduce their cancer risk, right? So it's all about like, what can I do? How much am I willing to learn? How much am I willing to admit that what I am doing isn't the best? And like, do I want to like live with that heaviness, or do I just want to say like, okay, I'll, you know, throw some mushrooms in the next time I feed my dog kibble, you know?
Fantastic. All right. Two more in the section. Puppuccinos.
Oh, I love them too. So underrated, I guess.
Yeah. My partner has mixed feelings about giving our dog anything sugar related.
Oh, wait, like the dairy?
Yeah, yeah, you know, the people.
Oh,
that
I
go
thought you meant the I thought you meant the experience.
Oh no, I'm talking about watching people driving through Starbucks and giving their dogs like a cup of whipped cream from the Starbucks
barista.
Oh
no, I think it's overrated for sure. Like, but it's underrated in terms of how much joy it brings someone to like give them a pup cup like on their gotcha day or the dog's birthday. Like, that's underrated. That's overrated.
Gotcha.
No one saw my finger pointing to the thing.
Yeah. All right. Last one in this section, pet restaurants. I've been reading about some of these, and there's now one in San Francisco where you can literally make a reservation for your dog. Your dog sits at a table and they give a multi-course meal. Do you think that's ridiculous, or do you think that's kind of neat?
I think that's really dumb.
Yeah. Okay.
is dumb worse than ridiculous?
Explain your attribution. Why is it dumb?
I don't think we can humanize dogs that way. Like, a dog does not know that it is at this experience, right? A dog wants to be like, take your like sniffing and enjoying its environment. Sure, it's going to be excited about food, but then also as a pet owner, like, could I imagine Norman, my golden retriever, sitting across the table from me, and like, as they're bringing out food, him just going absolutely crazy on the table and not this restaurant not caring? That sounds like a whole lot of fun one time.
Yep.
So I don't know. I also think it's dumb from a like behavioral standpoint. Like,
A dog would much rather just run around a park, you know, or
and like, you know, parvo. I don't want parvo plates. I don't want parvo pasta.
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Okay. So we're going to talk now about kind of relationships with animals before we close with Fresno questions. So what kinds of cues do you look for when you're getting to know an animal?
Everything. Everything that I know this animal to be in that moment. And I do diligently study the animals that I have. And by study, I'm watching everything from like, am I picking up good solid turds right now, or is there something runny, like to the point where it's concerning, where I need to start rotating differently to like narrow it down who it is? Or like, is their gait different? Was that just because they slept funny, or is that going to become a pattern that I see as concerning? So it's just, dogs you bring in, you have to like remember that, again, they're their own dog. I mean, genetically, if you have a golden retriever, right? Golden retrievers, their traits are to be aloof, essentially. So you can know that and expect that from the golden retriever, but you can't expect them to be that way because of, you know, backyard breeding and poor just hips and breeders not doing what they need to do to produce a quality dog where someone who wants a golden retriever is getting a golden retriever. You know, someone who wants a Malinois is getting a fucking robot dog. The amount of like shepherds and huskies and bully breeds that are just so poorly bred, it's so disheartening.
Yeah. What do you think people most misunderstand about aggression in dogs?
I think that they don't look at it from multiple angles. I think that they hear a scary bark or they hear a growl or their dogs get in a fight. I don't think they take the time to learn why.
Mm-hmm.
Again, to a level of, okay, I have the ability to research this more and hire a trainer and follow their advice and XYZ. But then we have people who are just like, oh, that cattle dog just bit my kid's ankle. Then I would look at them and ask them, like, why did you get a cattle dog? Cattle dogs herd sheep. They nip at the ankles of these animals when they are running. Like, that dog is herd. Yeah, dog is doing what it's supposed to be doing. Like, and now you want to like surrender or whatever it is, or ask a rescue to take it on when you didn't do your due diligence of the breed you're getting. Are you buying from a breeder that can, that's not just like, oh, AKC pups. No, show me the mom and dad. Show me their genetics. Tell me what you've done to make this the best possible Frenchie on the face of this planet. Even if it has long hair, show me what you've done. Buy from those people that are so invested into being able to tell you, instead of just seeing like a Rottweiler puppy and paying $600 from it and then being like confused as to why it just bit your arm off when you reach down to touch its freaking food.
Yeah. Do you think it's unethical to adopt a dog from a breeder with our shelters overflowing and our rescues overflowing?
Okay. So I feel like I'm like, so before I even answer to your question.
Yeah, no, you're ready.
No, you buy from breeders. So adopting is you're choosing to, you're still buying a dog, right? There's still a transaction of cash or whatever. But like the difference is adoption is you're providing a home for a dog that doesn't have one. Breeders like produce dogs, right? They purposefully bring more dogs in. So you are buying from them. And these breeders like are responsible for all of those dogs for the entire lifetime of the dog. So like you're buying because they are investing into a product that they are selling. Does that make sense? I don't even remember the question.
Well, I was just asking you whether you think it's ethical. So it's like, you know, if you're...
Oh, yeah. No. So I would, yes, 100% ethical. If someone wants a German Shepherd, if they want a long-haired German Shepherd, and they want to buy that type of dog from a breeder, yeah. But okay. Do your research on who it is. Like,
right.
Because there
right.
are
well,
really
I guess
good
what I'm
breeders.
Saying is we have so many animals that need homes. But right. We're breeding more when people are buying these purebred dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's largely an aesthetic decision. They want something that looks pretty, you know,
right.
or has a certain look to it.
100%.
And should we be encouraging people, you know, take that snaggletooth dog, you know, because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Versus like seek out, you know, the $5,000 doodle of whatever variety.
Yeah. So it's funny because it might sound like opposite, like coming from a rescuer standpoint, but it always just comes down to how was that dog that you want, right? That you really want, because I don't think that we should limit anyone on what they feel is going to bring them joy. I yeah. really, really don't. But we can hold them accountable. We can say, where did you get your doodle? Okay. Did you make sure that that breeder like did health checks? You know, are they registered with AKC? And if they are, how far back does the lineage go? Do they even have that on their profile? Like, do your due diligence of where the dog is coming from.
Okay.
So
that makes sense.
Because there's poor rescues that like go and get, you know, these designer dogs from breeding mills.
Yeah.
And then bring them in as rescues and you adopt. Like, that's not how this works.
Yeah. Okay.
Rescues are to help shelters. Shelters are to provide a service for a city. City is to provide animal control.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. My next question is a really hard one. It's one I've had personal experiences with. So there's always a question towards the end of a dog's life of when it's time to let go.
Yeah.
And when you should keep spending. So like my right. particular situation is I had a dog who had a heart condition. He was, I think, 10 and a half. You know, he was not a, we didn't buy him from a breeder. We got him from a rescue. Yeah. So he's mixed of some kind. And the situation was it was going to be an exorbitant cost. And then there was a pretty low likelihood of success. Right. And so we decided to say goodbye. But making mm-hmm. that decision is really hard because mm-hmm. you kind of feel like you could do something. And then yeah. after you make the decision to put the dog down, you know, you do the what ifs in your head or
right.
you kind of you go through that game. How do you think about when it's time?
So this has been, I think, just because like you went through that experience, and in rescue, this is the hardest thing. Because not as far as like, you know, at the vet's office or choosing euthanasia, but it's constantly like this, like compassion fatigue, right? Of this, these really, really hard decisions of, you know, maybe this dog has a 50-50 chance of living or dying. And what if those odds were exactly what they were? What would you choose? Of course, to live, right? But then there's like, at what point, like, are you their voice and still keeping yours? Like, how do you continually make that decision while asking yourself, you know, do I have the capacity to fundraise for this? You know, I have an estimate in front of me. Like, am I going to put myself in a position where I can't put it on myself, and I've done the best I could? And that looks different for everybody. I mean, I've recently had a situation where my daughter had found a stray cat in Kingsburg, you know, did the right thing, brought it to after our vet care. They wouldn't euthanize it because they said stable, but you could be in the ICU and be stable, right? You could yeah. be critical unstable. And we took it to another vet. They ended up euthanizing this stray cat in Kingsburg. My daughter drove it up 20. The emergency vet ended up not charging us. But what would have happened if my daughter just chose to like leave the cat there? Right. It's just about like, what can you do? Yeah. What position are you willing to put yourself in? And yeah. and I'm learning in rescue. I want to do this. I'm passionate about it. I absolutely love it, but I really have to love me. And I really have to start like making myself like understand that I know joy. Like, I know it, and I want to live in that space. So how can I do and continue to do what I'm passionate about without killing myself? How do I do that? And how does anyone do that?
Yeah. I mean, that's the underlying thing in all helping industries is how do we take care of ourselves mm-hmm. well? And it
right.
like, I mean, I think we, you know, my background is in the teaching world, and you see young teachers mm-hmm. that'll just throw themselves into every, you know, yeah. extracurricular activity, staying after school, tutoring kids at lunch, doing every possible thing to save the world, essentially, is right. what they're doing. And over time, I feel like you get three paths. You get a path where people get jaded and so they stop caring. You get a path where people just quit because they get overwhelmed. But then there's that very rare middle lane where they can figure out how to balance self-care. And that's, I feel like that's rare because it's really hard to figure out.
And I think it's hard because like those hard moments, it's almost easy. Like it's easier to say yes than to ask myself those questions. Like it is easier to actually take this dog in than to walk away from it.
Yeah.
And it's hard. And like you said, you dig yourself into a hole and I'm like still climbing out of that, you know, like financial, everything, but I'm still new to rescue, but I know if I want to keep doing it, I have to learn how to do it the right way that works for me.
Yeah.
And I don't, that's ever evolving. So
Let's say I made you the animal czar of Fresno for a week. What would you do with your time?
I don't know what that word
means.
You
got unlimited power to control budgets, the whole thing.
Oh, like whoever
Emperor of animal world of Fresno, what would you do?
So like whoever made the genie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you do the thing.
You do the thing.
You could just control things.
Oh, I would travel in time back to when like ASPCA started, because they were one of like ASPCA and then another humane over there. And I would at that moment take everything that I know, just like for me right now that I know, and I would write it into the law. And I would not let shelters expand into different states without there being a contract with that state and that government of what their responsibilities are. And then I'd do the same thing with the AKC because they were founded by the same people. So a man that saw a need to protect the breed and a man that saw a need that sometimes dogs get out and reproduce. Sometimes these things happen. Sometimes puppies are born with special needs and there needs to be a space for that too. I would go back and I'd just give them all I know right now.
Yeah. This is a question I ask everybody, and I'm always curious people's different perspectives. So I think what we choose to do with our time informs how we see a place. So I work in education, and so I tend to see that world through that lens. How has what you do on a daily basis affected the way you see Fresno? It's a big question, I realize.
Oh, it made my heart drop. It made my heart drop because, yes, living in the Central Valley is hard, but I lived in Kingsburg before I lived in Fresno. And so I started the rescue in Kingsburg before I moved to Fresno. And when I was in rescue, I had gotten to the point of being so overwhelmed when I first started, when I was still in Kingsburg, that my daughter moved out of the house. I've been a single mom. My daughter's, oh my gosh, Brennan, you're 18. She's 18? Is she 18? She's also married, which is fine. Her husband's so cute, Caleb. Okay, anyways, single mom. And she moved out of the house because of what I allowed rescue to be in my life. And I lost her. I lost her. I moved up to, we still had a really great relationship and she was staying at my mom's house. So like, it was fine and a mutual decision for her well-being, okay?
Okay.
I didn't like lose her to the state or anything. So then I move up to Fresno and now I'm moving away from, you know, Kingsbury is a very beautiful town. And I chose to make that decision because I thought it was going to help me feel less overwhelmed from all this stuff that I had. It gave me the opportunity to do that. And it added more and it added more and it added more to the point where, and this is important for me to say, because I want to be a place of transparency and I want to be a place of like, we really have to look at ourselves if we want to be in rescue. Or like you said, if I want to be in teaching and if I want to care about these other really bad things that are going on in the world, like how can I do that with still keeping who I am? April of last year, I tied a rope around my neck and my partner at the time found me. How did I ever get to that point where I felt like I had no other option? I can look, like I look at it and I'm like, how did that? I'm sitting in, you know, I'm on a 5150 hole and I'm sitting in this position and I'm like, how did I let the thing that I was most passionate about, the thing that I wanted so much, destroyed me in all of these little moments and all of these times. And that's why I'm so heavy on these questions of moving back to, hey, what can I do? Because the fact that I chose to do that blows my mind. I have a daughter. Like, I have people that love me. This community, like, we have the best online community ever. Like, the farters, like, oh my gosh, they're the coolest. Like, I get packages from people because I love, like, tahine and, like, chamoy and like, the gushers that are covered in them. Oh my gosh, so good. So I have so many people that love me, and I want to show up as authentic as possible, but I feel all this baggage, right? And then it, like, no, I don't, like, I never want to be in a position that it didn't feel good.
Yeah.
Ever.
Well,
put that on my dating profile.
thank you for sharing all of that.
Yeah.
And the vulnerability. It feels like a hard right turn, but we're going to close with book recommendations. Or what are a few books you'd recommend to listeners?
No, it's not a hard close. I think it's a perfect close. Okay. It was on the list.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right,
yeah,
after that question you just asked me. Dare to Lead. Have you heard that? Are you going to respond?
I have heard that, say a little bit about why you selected that one.
Okay, so Dare to Lead. I always pick out these little points in books that I just choose to love. Brené Brown, so I'm an audio listener. I'm dyslexic, ADHD, you know, all the special stuff that makes me so beautiful. All of these little things in these books, it's always like things that they said, but her tone of voice as she was reading this book to me, I just felt empowered by it. It's like, so I can't tell you a single thing that's in that book until someone's just like, oh yeah, I remember this. I'm like, no, I remember how I felt reading that. And I know it's still in my library and I can go back and just be like, oh, like almost skim through it now. Just like, we're past that, Brené. Is that how you say her name?
I think so, yeah.
The Waking Up app. I know that's not a book.
Oh, yeah.
But,
me too.
My gosh. I don't know if I should say this because I don't want, like, you know, because everyone's going to listen to this podcast. But I got a free 30-day, like, from a friend. And, like, it's, like, what, $15 a month or something? And I had to, like, really ask myself, like, Diane, like, you actually only have $3 in your bank account. Like, are you, how you love it? And then I let it go for a couple months and I realized the decline back in my mental health, in my excitement to do things. And so I go on their website because I wanted to get their email to ask them if I could, like, have another free month. And I go there and there's a page on there, which makes this app even freaking cooler. There's a page on there where you can get like a sponsorship. Like, you can, what's the word? Is it sponsored? Not a sponsorship.
Yeah, scholarship. No. Scholarship.
Scholarship. That one. I'm so educated. A scholarship. And then you can choose, like, oh, what can you pay? And I literally, like, there wasn't even a, like, I think the lowest option was like $4.99. But then there's that guilt of, like, requesting the free 6-month option, you know?
Don't.
Oh, no, I didn't. I pressed that button. I was just like, no, I came here to email them for a free month. And now I have the opportunity to have 6 of them. Heck yeah, I'm taking that because that's where I'm supposed to be. And I'm supposed to re-download this app and get back at, like, so, yeah.
Fantastic.
Want another one?
Yeah, let's do one more.
Untangled by Lisa Damore.
Okay.
I would highly recommend that to any parent of a preteen or teen girl. It's from a scientific base level of 7 reasons, like, things happen and shift the way they do in relationships. And how can you approach that to be there for them as they're going through these changes? It's so cool. It's so good.
Awesome. So to close, where can people find out about your work online, more about FART if they're interested in getting involved?
That's a great question. So you can go to helpusfart.com. There is
Fantastic
a disclaimer.
URL.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's a disclaimer even, like, that pops up and it's like, are you ready to fart? Like, be prepared. And you have to click, like, I'm prepared to get in there. So there's not a whole lot on there. I could do better, but I'm also just one person and it's still a wicked cool website. So I'm proud of that. You can find us on Facebook, all at Help Us Fart, or see it. Now I'm just going to confuse people because we have a bazillion pages because it was never Help Us, like, it was never fart, you know?
Yeah.
It was just. So maybe we could just put it or say it's going to be linked somewhere.
We'll put all the respective links in the bottom. Diane, I appreciate the work you're doing so much and the energy and love that you bring to it and all the animals that you're helping. Thank you for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me. It was so fun.
Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, you can support this podcast by leaving us a rating and review or by making a financial contribution at our Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/Fresno's Best. We'll see you next time.